You spoke to your spirit guides. Who are our spirit guides? Are they people from the family who've already departed?
The first level of familiarity of guides that they feel comfortable with and familiar with is going to be past loved ones. I have a very vivid memory of being 6 years old, and I would always crawl under the kitchen table, and I was talking to a man with like a old-fashioned hat, and I'm like, okay, I'm having all these conversations, and my mom is like, what are you doing under the table? Who are you talking to? And I'm like, that's my friend, can you not see him? And we're having all these conversations, and then when I was 15, he introduced himself again, and he said, I'm your past life husband.
Do you think dragons really existed?
I started channeling a lot of dragon information. So this specific dragon, this one, that's a painting, by the way, that I made. So okay. I do these people where I connect them with their dragon guides through the eye. And so the dragon that presented itself to me in meditation in that one experience started coming to me more frequently in meditation. And it started showing me how we were connected in the Akashic Records.
Namaste and welcome back to Sanskriti Radio, the space where we explore the intersection of yoga, art, culture, and conscious living. Today we are joined by Ryan and his partner Deborah, the soulful creator behind Lemaire Soul Crafts. Ryan, who joined us on a previous episode, walks a path of inner alchemy and sacred masculinity, guiding others with presence and depth. Deborah brings the sacred into form through her handmade creations, ritual tools, and ancestral crafts shared through her Instagram, Lemaire Soul Crafts. Together, they embody a life rooted in spirit, creativity, and conscious love. We are going to dive into their journey, the story of soul crafts, and what it means to live with devotion. So get comfortable and let's step into this soulful conversation with Ryan and Deborah.
Can you tell us about yourself in a very layman way? So what I know is you're both some sort of psychic. Yeah, and we've had the opportunity to talk to Ryan already. So we know a little bit more about him than about you, Deborah. So if you can just take a few seconds to tell us about both of you and how do you bring your craft together?
Well, I am originally from Belgium, so not too far from France. And my mom is a psychic and a healer, so Okay. She kind of took me on this journey with her while I was growing up and took me to all these gatherings where I started developing my intuition and my psychic abilities. And so then I ended up in the United States and started connecting with a lot of people that were doing the same thing. And that's how we met. And yeah, we have a very similar way of looking at past lives and doing these readings. And then we kind of started working together and we did podcasts together and then we fell in love.
Was it that order?
I don't know.
I think one of our biggest connectors is the Akashic Records and how we both really have our own unique processes, but our individual processes as well of really being able to, one, first and foremost, tune into our individual Akashic Records, because we've done the deep trauma healing work, but then that comes over in our services. And so I think that's a really big overlap that we hold that shows up a lot. And dragons, of course.
Yes. Okay. So I don't understand dragons at all. So anyway, we'll dedicate a whole segment for that in today's podcast. But then what I know about Akashic Records is, okay, you can look into your past lives. How does it help people in their present life to know where they've come from?
Well, the way that I look at the Akashic Records is not really as past lives.
Okay.
The way that I started seeing it, because that was my own experience when they started revealing, like being revealed to me, my own past lives, it felt like suddenly time stopped moving and there was like an overlap happening of these two timelines collapsing. And suddenly I was still in this body, but I started seeing this whole other timeline where I could see I was in a conversation with people, and suddenly they changed and they became somebody else. And like in that experience, I could clearly understand what was happening. It's like I got the entire context in like a download, like a chip almost. That's like, this is the year, blah, blah, blah. This is what's happening. This person is doing this. And I could see like everybody's connection to each other throughout all these different timelines. And it's almost like a radio, like your body is the radio, and you can attune the radio to different radio stations that are all playing simultaneously. But you can only listen to one radio station at a time, of course. So you have to attune to one frequency, which is going to be the one that we're existing in right now. But at the same time, these other radio stations are still playing. So it's not really like they are in the past, but it's all about where you're attuned to with your soul in this moment, which is this lifetime here. So that's kind of how I see the Akashic Records and how I explain it to people. And that is also his experience. So we started kind of communicating about our experiences and how we're seeing these Akashic Records.
So you've been able to make a connection of people who were there in with you in the other timelines and who are here with you now. And you know why they are a certain way in this timeline because of what's happened in another timeline. Like, things like that are much easier to explain when you meet somebody and, oh, why is this person like this to me? And then you can make the connection.
And that is the reason why I'm so passionate about teaching people about these past lives, because it's not about escaping. It's not about escaping and daydreaming. It's about what is presenting itself to you in this life. What is a problem? What is something that you're experiencing maybe with a family member? And where did it really originate? And then by seeing where that actually took place, often can be dissolved in this timeline.
Yeah, and it's like this is the natural evolution of our consciousness, of ascending. This is where we're all going to, is like we're all going to be aware of our Akashic experience, and because that's the fourth dimension essentially. And so we are moving to the identity of our oversoul, of our awareness, the awareness that is, that incarnates as all of the different bodies simultaneously at one time. So when you're moving your identity to that space, you're integrating more of that. And then you are creating more of a holistic relationship with yourself, because these different lives will have different types of frequencies and blueprints that then kind of mix and match. And you can work with those other aspects of yourself as actual guides. And then you become a guide to some aspects of those selves and other lives as well. So you kind of start creating this relationship throughout time. Whereas, as she's explaining it, we have the linear, the thing that we've been so programmed to think is really the only thing that exists, the knob on the radio dial that moves back and forth, but all of the stations are existing at once. And so we're learning how to use that radio dial to zone in on what needs to come through in order for us to really express and integrate what is most important for us to.
So how long have you been doing this for?
So I started going through my awakening in this life in around 2018, I think, 2017, 2018. And I started getting into the Akashic Records right around 2021. So I did a lot of meditating. I was healing trauma. I started learning that I could channel and that I could talk to different spirit guides. And then I went through this whole process where I started chanting mantras. I got into the process of doing the Vedic meditation, the chanting mantras. And I all of a sudden started having similar experience that she was talking about. I'd be chanting a mantra, and then I was this other body, and I was experiencing this other life, and I was getting all of these details. And so I just started working with that on my own just for myself, and I wasn't offering it as a service or anything like that. And so I started offering it as a service about a year ago now is when I started. And so it's been about 4 years, 3 to 4 years that I've really been practicing and in that process of it.
So for both of you, it was more like something that happened on its own, like the whole process unfolded automatically for both of you. You did not have to go and learn it from someone. Is that right?
Yeah. In my case, I started seeing my own past lives. When I was a child, I saw some of the first past lives, but it was not, I was not like, oh, now I have to dive into this and investigate. It was like, oh yeah, this is a past life. I'm aware of this, but I didn't really do much else with it. So this is when I was around like 15 years old, I started becoming aware of some of these past lives. And I was reading a lot of books because back then there was not the internet yet where you could go and find all this information. So I went to the library a lot and started reading books on past life regression, Akashic records, hypnosis, doing all these things. And then the first real detailed past life that I then dove into was when I was 17. And then I kind of, I did have a phase where I stepped away from it all and I said, I'm not doing this anymore, which of course, then it came back when I was in my early 30s, which was in like 2016, 17. It started coming back and I had this whole reawakening basically where all these Akashic records started coming to me spontaneously and okay. It basically started coming to me and then I started researching. I started Googling like all these things I was seeing and it was lining up with specific times in history, specific laws, tribal laws, stuff like that, that I couldn't have known about. And then I kind of started reversing the process of how am I seeing these things? How can I now trigger these things to come to me instead of it spontaneously just overwhelming me? And so that's what I then started doing. I started creating this way of going into these experiences. And then I started offering it for people in 2018 is when I started offering these readings. And I never took any real classes. And I know that there are people that are teaching Akashic Records classes, but I don't believe you need a class because Akashic Records are already in you and everyone's going to have their own unique way of connecting with these other lifetimes. And it's more about being open. And being open to, and sometimes I think people are having memories, but they dismiss it. Mm-hmm. They say, oh, it's just a dream. It's just fantasy. It's my imagination. Or they have a specific pull to a time period, or they have a pull to specific cultures that they can't explain. And that is always an indication of a past life that is wanting to come through and show itself to you, I feel. Mm-hmm. Is that your experience?
Yeah,
too?
Definitely. And mine, the process I used to not overwhelm myself when all of the stuff would come up was I started recognizing, like what she's saying, that things that were happening in my reality were already pointing me towards these Akashic records. And so like the movies that I'd watch, the books that I'd read, the stories that I was into, all of those were pointing in some way to different memories and experiences that I had. And so when I would watch movies, because that's really honestly how my process kind of unfolded, was mantra and meditation and then movies and stories. Okay. And so I would watch movies and just ask, how is this connected into my life? How is this connected into my Akashic records? And I learned how to start reading those messages in a very, very multidimensional way. And so I started getting these kind of hints and these communications around following these different synchronicities. And then I'd kind of hold on to it intuitively and let it put itself together. And so like sometimes I'll get the insight to one Akashic life over the period of like 3 weeks, and all of these different details will come through. To whereas she's in this space where she can really dive in a meditative trance state and go into all of the details that it takes me multiple weeks to get. So it's been interesting to see how our processes are unique in that way.
Mm-hmm. And so it started with your own personal experiences, but now you can do it for others as well.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And it was when I was doing mantras and I would start getting the emotions and the feelings and different memories and visions and see how then like that was connected already into something I was doing in this life. And so it was really just I used that process in the first part to investigate my life. And I've talked about this on my YouTube. I experienced a lot of things in childhood that were very secretive, very traumatic. And so I had to go through a process of asking a bunch of questions of like, what is actually going on in my life? Like what actually happened in my childhood compared to what I'm being told? And so I had to go through this whole process of using it only personally, only for myself to kind of check and balance and see what the truth actually was. And then so through that process, then I was able to feel confident in starting to offer it for other people, because then I would just get insights for other people. I'll look at someone and it's like I'm just peering into the field of information, and certain things will come through around the star systems that they've been in, and you know, just whatever I kind of pick up on. And so then I started realizing I could focus in on that and work with it more. And so that's why I then started offering it as well.
Does it work the same way for you? Like if you see someone, you think you can instantly tap into their, I don't know what it can be called, but you can figure out about them, where they come from and their Akashic records and everything.
Are you asking Deborah?
Yes. Well, usually I'll just need their picture and their name. The way that I do the Akashic records is I'll ask the person if they have specific questions. Like some people will have a specific obstacle and they just can't figure out where this is coming from. They've tried everything. Mm. They've tried therapy. They've tried all these things. And or a specific family dynamic, and they're like, where is this coming from? Or they keep having money issues. Like, why does it seem like I can't handle money? Why do I keep getting this illness? All this stuff. And some people are just like, whatever comes up, just whatever wants to show itself. And so usually I'll first tune into their higher self, which of course is just their soul that is aware of everything that's happening. And I will ask them what their message is for the person. And then I go in with the dragons. And we'll probably get to the dragon chapter later. But the dragons are the main guides that I work with in the Akashic Records. So basically, I just take myself there the way that I would when I'm reading my own Akashic Records. And I'm connecting with this person's higher self through the picture or the name. And then I ask like a cosmic GPS, basically. The way that I look at it is this is all a cosmic GPS that I can navigate. I just need coordinates. So I ask people, don't be afraid to give me specifics. Write me long paragraphs with questions, because that is all coordinates. And I can zoom in on this cosmic map and it'll take me exactly where I need to go. And so I'm going to try to stay very non-judgmental about the stuff that I'm seeing, because I may not understand it. There is going to be this logical part of me that will try to analyze it, or that's what we try to do, of course, of what we're being shown. But it's basically just like the observer. So I observe it and then I'm recording and I just start talking and sharing what I'm seeing, and then it'll all become clear. So somebody that, for instance, has a phobia, like a friend of mine, she has a phobia of plants, like she has no idea. She's deathly afraid
plants, of plants. Okay.
Yes, and she fainted in a store once because she was surrounded by plants. In public, she fainted. So, and she's like, this is not normal. Where is this coming from? And then she saw, okay, this is coming from a Roman lifetime where she was a Roman soldier and these people were healing her, but they were actually secretly poisoning her with this plant stuff that they, this powder that they were mixing up with water. So that part of her that still was traumatized, that soul aspect was traumatized, and it came through and said, oh, be careful around plants because that's how I died. So it's almost like PTSD on a soul level. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm going to then be shown in the Akashic Records and I'll share with these people. And then sometimes for me, it doesn't make sense, but they get these messages and they're like, I understand it. It makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm. But can it also be that once you know something about this, like because of the history of the world has been so violent, you could be in a war or you could have been anywhere, basically. And knowing about that creates more fear in this life. Can it be that way?
Yeah, because you have people that come in and they are just overwhelmed by society. And one example is a client of mine from Belgium that I've been working with for a couple of years. And he says, I cannot function in like my normal job. I keep having problems with my employers. I can't stand loud noises. I can't function. Why? And then I saw that he had lifetime after lifetime where he was this soldier in all these wars and that he was basically still traumatized on a soul level. And the pressure of society was just a lot. But then it's really important to kind of make them aware of, okay, this is not your fear. I mean, this is not your fear of the person that you are in this life. On a soul level, this is your fear. But if you realize that there's nothing to be afraid of in this lifetime here, that you are not in danger. Nobody's going to stab you with a sword in this life. You can walk down the street. You can take the bus, take the train. You're not in a battlefield. So,
okay.
I think the best way to understand it too, and from what I've seen just from working in the one-on-one sessions that I do, is like, that's why we go into the Akashic Records, because no matter what, the fear is going to be there. Mm-hmm. And any fear that's coming up in this life, I have found, is always able to be traced back to another life every single time. And so it's like these emotional kind of bandwidths, frequencies that extend throughout time. And so the more you trace that emotion back around whatever concept that emotion is around, then the more you're going to be able to find these patterns where that has manifested in their soul experience. And so when there's imbalance within the soul body, it's like an instrument. It's like a strings on a guitar or, you know, a wind instrument, but it's very out of tune. It's playing things that aren't in harmony. And so, whoa.
Are you okay?
Yes. Just choked on my own spit. Speaking
maybe
of
harmony, something came up.
Yeah, speaking of harmony. And so those strings and that disharmony can be played when things are triggered and when things are catalyzed. And so we can hold these beliefs in our subconscious that then have to do with these experiences we've had in other lives around plants or around animals, around water, around anything. And then we hold these subconscious beliefs and they project into this life. And so the reason why we go into the Akashic Records and why I offer it is because we really can't get to a full place of soul integration until we are opening up those, removing those walls that we've erected in our Akashic Records and allowing those things to flow through. Because really it's about the flow of our heart. The Akashic Records is our heart. It is the rhythm. It is the heart chakra of the universe. And so the more we're connected into the different relationships in that heart chakra, then the more we're going to have more of a rhythm and more of a harmony of flow in our life.
And now more and more people talk about this. They talk about Akashic records and other forms of psychic abilities, which probably even 10 years ago, we didn't hear about it so much. Why do you think that's happening? Is it because of internet? Because now what you talk about in one part of the world, everybody else hears it. It's much easier to reach people. Or do you think something is happening in the world? Like something is changing? Why more and more of us are being are going towards this, you know, to figure out more about psychic abilities and spirituality in different sense?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's both. It's a combination of both. And it's been interesting because I was opened up to all of this stuff when I was a child. And this was in like the late 90s. And there was no internet. We didn't really have internet yet. And it was still kind of taboo because I was in high school, I remember, and I had library books in my backpack about past life regression and studying the Akashic records and aura reading, all these things. And I was taking them to school with me, and I had to make sure, well, I was in this state of, oh my God, I have to make sure no one accidentally sees these books in my bag, because then they're going to make fun of me. They're going to say stuff like, oh, you're weird or all this.
Yeah.
And now it has become very normal. People are like, oh, yeah, I do a meditation class. Oh, I took a healing class. I'm a healer. And it's all very normal.
Yeah.
And it is also because people, yes, the internet has made it more accessible. You don't have to go and find books. The information is accessible by just going on your computer. And also people are having these experiences because their higher selves, their souls, have chosen this point in time as a catalyst point, because there is more stuff. Also, the planet holds its own Akashic records. The planet holds its own soul memory, and it's being time released. So right now, a lot of these Atlantean and Lemurian codes from these ancient Earth civilizations are being time released. So people that have lived on the planet during those higher frequency times, they are being activated by the planet. So they are going suddenly through an awakening, a spiritual awakening, and they're starting to look for information, which is now more accessible through the internet. So it's a combination of both.
Yeah, this is the interesting thing about belief and limitation too, because this is a true story. I don't know the guy's name, but it was the first guy to run a mile in under like 4 minutes or something like that, back in sometime in the 1900s. And before he did this, no one else had run the mile in under 4 minutes. But once he did it, within like a year, there were 10 more people who had done it already. And so it's because they found out that he had done this, and then they opened their mind to the possibility of it existing. And even if they don't hear about it directly, that action that that person takes is going to open a path in the collective mind and make that then possible and more available for other people to choose. And so we're just naturally going through this ascension process. And so we're all getting back to remembering that we've had access to this stuff before. And so as soon as someone sees another person doing an Akashic Records reading, then that makes them question if that's possible for them. And so then you have the internet, and then we have all of these people doing these Akashic Records readings. And so that's also where you get people wanting to make an identity out of it, wanting to be the next Akashic Records reader when they are actually not clear internally, and they just want to be labeled as this Akashic Records practitioner, but they still have all this trauma, and they're tuning into these kind of like false, distorted aspects of the Akashic Records. So it's really like the human nature and the human mind of, one, the progress of like infinite capability in general, but also the human personality and wanting to be seen as the ones who can see into the Akashic Records. Because truthfully, every single person can tune into the Akashic Records, exactly like she's saying. Every single person.
But we can't.
Because we forgot. We've disconnected those neural pathways. And so everyone already is tuned into the Akashic Records. It's impossible not to be connected into the Akashic Records because it is your heart chakra. It is your body. It is your memory in your soul. So if we have this wall that we've created, this identity that we don't have access to the Akashic Records, then we're creating a separation from that aspect of ourself. So that's where we then get these situations where people have all this fear and they don't know where that fear is coming from because they've told themselves that they don't have access to this type of thing anymore. So they aren't able to trace that emotion fully back into the depths of their heart.
Yeah. And what you said about people having not healed their own trauma, but because we all want to be called healers and everyone wants to, is doing some or the other sort of healing now. So do you have a way to figure out who is the real healer, who's the true healer, the healed who can heal others?
I think we all have the capability of being real healers.
Yeah.
But I think it's all about how we are approaching these healing abilities. One person may have a traumatized part in their self that needs validation from others, that needs to be loved and recognized by others. And they're going to try to find that in the form of, oh, look at what I can do. And then they're basically getting validation from the clients that are saying, oh, I love what you did for me. Thank you. And they kind of need that to heal themselves. But then there are those that are able to remain neutral and that can see past their own trauma and that are in a neutral state offering these services. And they are simply doing it for the sake of being the channel. It's not about them needing validation. The reaction or lack of reaction that comes from the client means is not going to add extra validation that they need for their own healing. So I think we can all become balanced healers, and it all comes down to looking at your reasoning or intention behind wanting to pursue a certain path. Mm-hmm. Like, what is your intention? Why do you want to offer these services? Where is it coming from? Is it coming from a place of devotion to source, creator, God, whatever name you choose? Or is it coming from a place of lack and needing to be recognized for something that you are good at? And I think in a lot of cases, it can also go back and forth. There are people that have this intention of really doing this because they love humanity. They want to serve humanity, but then they will have phases where they're healing stuff within themselves, where the reaction from their clients can help them also to heal. Mm-hmm. So it's really fluid, I think.
Yeah, and it's like healing is just about holding space. And then the more you have mastery of holding that space, the more you can maneuver that space to make it possible for healing to be chosen. Because we can provide all the information, all of the healing techniques, all of the practices. If that person that's receiving it doesn't have a belief that they can heal, then it's not going to happen and they're not going to experience it. And so on the other hand, someone could have this very connected conversation with someone who's not a healer, and that person holds the space really well and they make this other person feel seen. And that person comes away from the interaction like, wow, I like feeling healed. They might not even realize that they feel healed. And so it's really just about, like she's saying, detachment from the identity of it. Because the point of healing is to get us back to this space of identifying as source, identifying as the one infinite creator, because that's what's placed us in these limitations so far. So if we're just able to hold the space and allow what needs to come through without placing, we are the ones that are healing this person, because it's really, it's not, that's not the truth. We're providing space and we're providing help, but it's completely up to that other person to receive the depth of what can actually be healing.
Yeah. So, Ryan, for you personally, you've had a sort of a traumatic childhood. And I know, like you said, you've spoken about it in your YouTube and other podcasts as well. Do you want to quickly touch upon it? And was it through Akashic Records that you finally were able to forgive and let go? Or did you already figure out why this was happening to you?
Yeah, well, it is because of the Akashic Records that I was able to move through this. And what happened was in 2022, I had suppressed memories come to the surface that reminded me that I was put through mind control experiments as a child multiple times, a handful of times throughout my life growing up. I was put through military level mind control experiments, psychic experimentation, that had to do with including abuse, sexual abuse, satanic.
And this
ritual.
Was by your own parents?
By a stepmother. Okay. Yeah. And so no, not my own parents. And so because I had been working with channeling and tuning into my soul up until that point in time, I was then able to tune into the Akashic Records to receive the information that was coming through, which was like, this person that you think is your mother actually isn't your biological mother. That was one of the first memories that was coming up to the surface. So I went into a very hectic state. I wasn't really believing things. My mind was felt like it was splitting. And so I had to just use my techniques and go into my space and talk to my soul and my higher self and start viewing the Akashic Records. And I started getting all of these very, very vivid memories that would come up that would then kind of purge through my body in a physical and energetic way. And so I basically went on the investigation process ever since then. And so I've been uncovering what actually happened in my life. I ended up confronting the stepmother who was one of the abusers, and I cut her out of my life. And so I used that process of Akashic awareness to create boundaries, to remove unhealthy cords that were still connected to that abuser and to those situations. And then I found how those were all connected to Akashic experiences, and that everything that I experienced in this life was like an accumulation of all of the other things that I'd experienced in my other soul lives when it came to really heavy trauma. And so that's exactly why I was able to get to the place that I'm able to be at now, which is complete forgiveness, complete unconditional forgiveness, while still holding very strong boundaries and radical accountability towards the other.
And this person, until the Akashic Records, you believed was your mother. Is that what you said?
Correct. Yes, correct. I was told my whole life that she was my biological mother. Yeah.
And then did you meet your biological mother after?
I still have not met my biological mother, no.
Okay. Not yet. It's very personal, but do you want to? Sorry.
Of course. Yeah, that's one of the main purposes now is finding her on this earth and reconnecting with her. So absolutely, yes.
And why were you separated from her?
Because I was taken from her and from my biological father when I was a child, from these negative beings, like the kind of the secret military programs, the deep state military programs, like the covert family, secret society type stuff. I was taken by a group of those beings from my biological parents and then brought through this whole mind control experimentation and given to that stepmother. And she basically became my handler throughout my entire life. And so that when I started getting the memories, that's when I started questioning, what if she actually cared about me in the way that she was presenting that she did?
And is it because of these hardships that you were finally able to tap into all the wisdom that you have today?
I had to go through these hardships to get back to that wisdom. And so in a way, yes, for this life,
that created a very strong catalyst of me having to look at these things in a certain way. However, I would have found my way back to there no matter what, because that's what my soul was choosing. And so the nature of this planet, this life that we're living, is that there's heavy things like this going on. And so a lot of times that darkness tends to catalyze positivity. It can create more love and more psychic awareness. But I am trying to refrain from giving credit to that, to me holding the wisdom and the awareness that I have now, because that's just who I am. But I did go through this initiation, this gauntlet, this soul gauntlet that I prepared for myself. And I have immense gratitude for all of the experiences that helped me realize this again.
And what about you, Deborah? Your childhood, was it, I think it was quite a normal one, would you say?
Well, it was definitely not the trauma level of what Ryan experienced. Definitely not. My parents divorced when I was 5 years old. Like so many children, of course, their parents divorce. And so I ended up living with my dad. When I was 11, I moved to my dad because me and my mom, our personalities just did not really go together. And I ended up, and she lived in the middle of the city. And I quickly realized I was really sensitive to cities and noises. And I just really did not, my soul on a soul level was not okay living in a busy environment. And my dad lived in the middle of nature. We had chickens and all and dogs. And I said, I want to live with you. So I moved over there. But I would visit my mom still every weekend, every other weekend I would visit. And that's when she kind of had her spiritual awakening, because that was the catalyst for her to like start going on this healing journey for herself, because I decided to live with my dad. Mm-hmm. So that kind of triggered her into diving into spirituality. And then that kind of brought us back together, where we bonded over this spiritual journey. So when I was 12, me and her, we started kind of doing all this, because she took self-hypnosis classes, the Silva method. You may have heard of it.
Yeah.
It's like alpha training, alpha brainwave training. And she started teaching me like, oh, you have to do these things with me. And she saw that I was excited about it, that I was good at it. And then she took a channeling class and she taught me automatic writing. And so that's kind of what my childhood was like. I was noticing that these things all came very natural to me. And then by the age of 14, 15, I was daily, like communicating on a daily basis with my spirit guides. And that was my teenage years, were me like channeling every day, diving into these connections and stuff. And yeah, so my childhood was kind of like that. It was definitely, some of it was a catalyst, but it was not as traumatic as Ryan's was. Mm-hmm. But then later, when I was in my early 30s and I was married to my ex, and that was a big catalyst for the spiritual awakening, because it was a very toxic marriage. It was abusive, and it was at a certain point, it was dangerous. And that was a whole catalyst for me to ask for help. Like, I don't know what to do. Help me. And then all these gifts that I had when I was younger, and I kind of suppressed it because, you know, you're like, you get married, have kids, and you kind of go through life. So you're kind of, I'm done with this. But then it all came back online when I realized I need help. Like, I need godly help. I need some kind of help from something outside of myself. And then it all came back.
So who are our spirit guides? When you say you spoke to your spirit guides, who are our spirit guides? Are they people from the family who've already departed, or how does it work?
I think we have a lot of different guides on many different levels. And for a lot of people, the first level of familiarity of guides that they feel comfortable with and familiar with is going to be past loved ones, like ancestors, like your grandmother, or parents that have passed away. those are going to be the first guides that, in my experience, start coming to you because you're familiar with these energies. These are not going to be energies that are going to be scaring you. And I have a very vivid memory of being 6 years old, and I would always crawl under the kitchen table. And I would sit there under the table, and I was talking to a man with like a old-fashioned hat, and I'm talking, and I'm like, okay, I'm having all these conversations, and my mom is like, what are you doing under the table? Who are you talking to? And I'm like, that's my friend. Can you not see him? And we're having all these conversations, and then I forgot about this imaginary friend, and then when I was 15, he introduced himself again. And he said, I'm your past life husband. So for me, it was also that, and also some family members, but that was one of the main guides, this past life husband. And then later I saw that that was from a Victorian lifetime in England, where they had these typical hats and all these like Victorian clothing. But then that was a way that it was familiar for me to first connect with this specific soul in this form of the Victorian man. Later, I saw when I started becoming aware of my own Atlantean lifetimes in Atlantis, which, of course, is a very advanced time period on Earth that happened before our known history, the Atlantean era, where apparently we had very advanced technology, advanced spiritual skills. So then I saw how the same soul was also a connection of mine in Atlantis, and we were connected there and working with all this frequency stuff and these psychic things in a temple. But if that would have been the image that I would have got of this man when I was 6 years old, six-year-old me would not have understood. It would have been like, what is happening? And it was just this man with the hat. And that's what I saw when I was 6 years old. And I definitely think, because then later I started connecting with Archangel Michael when I was 15. What you are ready for is what is going to present itself to you. So you can have guides on all these different levels, but it's going to depend on what you are ready for, because they never want to scare you. They want you to feel comfortable in their presence. So they're going to present themselves to you in a way that you are going to feel comfortable with, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any?
I know that I had some relationships with guides when I was younger, but I don't really remember the details of those. I know that I had kind of this like dragon dog type being friend, but I first got introduced to guides in like 2020, I think, when I was going through the spiritual awakening journey. But it was first for me was it was my like Andromedan self. So it was the aspect of me that exists in the Andromeda galaxy. I was like, someone was channeling into me and giving me a message. It was the first time I'd experienced something like that. And she was telling me that this big blue light being that was me from Andromeda was coming through, and she gave me this whole message. And so from there, I immediately started connecting with that aspect of myself. And then some other guides, they're just called the guides. They actually also speak through Paul Selig, but they are from the Pleiades and from Arcturus and a couple other places. But they are another core aspect of my guides that I first connected with as well. And so mine was very cosmic. It was very extraterrestrial when I was first having contact with my guides.
And when you're talking about these extraterrestrial beings, they're not other planets, they're the galaxies. Am I right? Do I understand correctly?
It's both. It's both. So it's like we have our planet, which is in our solar system. So we're all, we have our star. And then that star is part of a larger constellation. And so then we have these different constellations throughout the galaxy. And so then we have different galaxies within the multiverse. And so we have all of these different
lives that we all live in, because we're all living in these dimensions simultaneously. Mm-hmm. There's not one person that's only existing in the third dimension. They all have an aspect of themselves that's in a higher dimension as well. And so we have these family members and these friends that then they'll come in and help us with these different lives and with these different experiences in these lives. And so sometimes they're from other planets, sometimes they're from another star system or another galaxy or another universe. It depends.
And I've seen you tell about people, like you look at people and you tell about, this is the kind of person, this is where they've come from, this is what their purpose on Earth is. How does that work? How do you get that insight?
It depends. Sometimes when I make these videos, this is information that I've known about people for a while. Sometimes I'll pick up information over a year or 6 months, and then I'll recognize like, oh, it's ready for me to talk about this and put it in a video. And so I'll speak that out. But other times I'll get the insight that I'm supposed to tune in to one of these people and then kind of bring through information at that point. And so it just kind of depends on what the circumstance is and kind of what the approach is calling for.
And you talk about all of us being a seedling or something? Like have all of us a star seed. Yes, a star seed.
Yeah.
So all of us are star seed.
It's basically the same thing. Yeah, it's like we're all from the stars. We are the universe. We're not just ever from the Earth. And the Earth is not just the Earth. The Earth is made up of all of its different existences throughout all of these different dimensions. You know, when we think of the word Gaia, Gaia is the name of a higher dimensional Earth. And so that higher dimensional experience of Earth is going to reflect on this aspect of Earth. And so every single soul has different star frequencies that they're working with, that they're bringing through. And so it just kind of depends on what's most in alignment for that current time period, because you might be called to look at this part of the galaxy and this star where you're at. And then a couple of years later, you focus on a different part. And so the important thing to know is just that we are the stars, literally. We are made of light. We are the stars and the suns themselves. And then the planets are made from the stars and the suns. And so there is no separation between a star and a soul. There's no separation. That's where souls come from, is the stars itself.
Yeah. So Deborah, now tell us about the dragons.
It all connects. Because of course, when people think of the word dragon or they hear, oh, you work with dragons, the first image that we get, well, it's two images that people often get. Either they associate dragons with the Middle Ages and the knights fighting the dragons and the dragons being evil and the dragons guarding gold and they need to be slayed by the knights. And they are like demonized by the church. They are Satan. So that's what we think of. Mm. Or we think of the East, where dragons are a symbol of abundance, of good luck. When you look at China, Japan, they are a sign of abundance. You will have good luck, good health if you have this dragon guidance, basically. And then now with the New Age and like a lot of witchcraft type of communities, they are embracing like nature spirits, working with dragon spirits as a nature guide, as a spirit animal. And that is not wrong necessarily, but it is a limited view of how you can work with the dragon, because the way that I look at them, well, the way that they came to me, let's start with that. So when I was seeing all of these past lives again, I started seeing these past lives in most of them in 2017. I had been aware of a few of them, but then in 2017 is when it all exploded. When all these timelines that I mentioned earlier, they started collapsing, and I could make this whole spider web of connections with basically the web is my whole soul, and the threads on the web are all these lifetimes, and they're connected. And so I'm meditating and I'm trying to get answers. And suddenly in this meditation, I'm on the back of a dragon. And I'm like, "What? Who are you? What are you doing?" And this dragon is like, "I'm here to protect you and I'm going to guide you through this." And this was in the middle of a whole very this crazy situation that I was in at the time with my ex who was abusive. And I was trying to leave that relationship with my daughter who was 2 years old at the time. And I'm trying to find a way, how can I get out of this situation in a safe way with my child? And I'm having this whole spiritual awakening, what is happening in my life? And this dragon suddenly comes to me and starts showing me how to work with him. And so that's when I started seeing that the dragon's frequency is very close to that of the archangels. It felt very similar to an angelic frequency. And I was used to, what do angels feel like? What do archangels feel like? Because I had been working with the archangels since I was 15. So I'm like, why does this feel so familiar? This is a very celestial feeling frequency. And they started showing me then, I had a near-death experience a couple of years later. Yeah, in 2022. I actually had a near-death experience where I went to this golden realm where these fire serpents are made out of light. They were just made out of pure light. And they were telling me, like, we are the original form of the dragon. We are the seraphim. And in the Bible, the seraphim are described as fiery serpents that basically devote their entire existence to loving the creator. And that is what they do. And their whole purpose is supporting people and their soul mission. So that's what they told me in this near-death experience. And then I came back from that experience and I started connecting more with that higher frequency aspect of the dragon. And yeah. I started connecting people with these dragon guides that they all have. And these dragons want to come help us. They want to show us basically what.
So we all have dragon guides?
A lot of people have dragon guides, and some people will have a specific agreement with these dragons to really actively work with them, and others will have a more passive agreement where they may not be aware or need to be aware of these dragons, but they are all being guided, and we can all call upon them for collective guidance too for the planet.
And how do you know if you have a dragon guide?
Well, they, because people often ask me, how do I connect with this dragon? And they expect some big dramatic event where this dragon is going to appear. And a lot of the times, because they are just so anchored in love, they are the pure God frequency of love, of Christ consciousness. And of course, Christ is not connected to Jesus. It is the heart.
Yeah.
So they are going to make you feel love through your heart. And if you, a lot of people say they see dragon eyes when they meditate or when they close their eyes and they, or when they're dreaming, that they see a big eye. Quickly grab the eye, maybe. And so that's how they will connect. And I also have a whole playlist on YouTube.
Wow.
And it's called Dragon Lessons. And it's just really easy tips and tricks. How can you connect with this dragon? How can you know if you have a dragon? Often they will come to you when you're going through a very traumatic event in your life, a big catalyst. And then suddenly you're going to have this dragon energy that can come to you in meditation. And often you're just going to have an inner knowing. You're going to have a knowing of I have this dragon, or dragon synchronicities. Like, you're going to start to see commercials about dragons, books about dragons, and you're like, what is this dragon stuff? Why does this keep popping up? It is this dragon trying to announce itself, like, hey, you have me here to help you. And again, that connects back to these guides not wanting to scare you. Because imagine if this big dragon in its full energy presents itself, people are going to be like, and they're going to shut down. They're not going to want to talk to this big energy. So if they come to you, it's going to be in a more subtle way. They're going to want you to feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
So why dragon? Why not any other animal or being for that matter?
they do come sometimes to people in animal form, because I just had a client last week, and this dragon guide, and that's also one of your, we both have worked with this specific person, and she has this silver dragon guide that Ryan saw in a reading. But the same silver dragon had been coming to her prior as a jaguar, as another animal, as different types of birds. And so then I started seeing how it was constantly the same energy, but that because she was familiar with, okay, yeah, jaguar, spirit animals, she was open to receiving this energy in an animal form. So the dragon is basically the ultimate shape-shifting being that can show itself in any form, in an animal. It is both connected to the angels and to the earth. So it has this ability to connect with the planet and its animals. And you may also see birds, the same type of bird a lot, like physical actual birds, or some animal that you keep seeing. And you're like, why do I keep seeing a squirrel? Why do I keep seeing this? And sometimes it is, or cats, they love connecting with cats. So they will come to you through other animals too.
Yeah, and like we make a lot of images with dragons through ChatGPT and AI art, and they all come in very unique ways. Some of them are like, they have feathers, and then they'll have like antlers, and they'll have like kind of a beard and whiskers, but their body, and then another one will look maybe a little bit more like a snake in its body, and it looks more kind of like a dragon reptile face. And then maybe there's another one that looks more like a water dragon, and so they're basically just this primordial animal form, like she's saying, and they are the ones, like everything leads back to the dragon form, because the dragon consciousness is the consciousness of creation. It's the consciousness of creating patterns to create time and space, because the dragons are time and space itself. When we think of time, it's represented as a serpent. It's represented as a coil, and it spins upwards. And so we could see that coil as a dragon body. There's a tail and there's a head. And so I always talk about memory, and that like, you are the head of your dragon. And if you go back in memory, you're tracing the tail of your body back throughout time. And so there's all these different ways of understanding the dragon form and how it kind of shifts back and forth between all of these different varieties of things that we are so aware of already.
But do you think dragons really existed?
Yes.
At some point. Yeah. Yeah.
I wrote a whole book about it. I started channeling a lot of dragon information. So this specific dragon, this one, that's a painting, by the way, that I made. Okay. So I do these people where I connect them with their dragon guides through the eye. And so the dragon that presented itself to me in meditation in that one experience started coming to me more frequently in meditation. And it started showing me how we were connected in the Akashic Records. And I started seeing how we had been connected as dragon and dragon rider, or like allies, basically, in these other star systems, like Ryan mentioned before, these other more high frequency star systems where we had these more advanced abilities, and also in Atlantis and Lemuria, these older time periods on Earth where humans still had these more advanced abilities. And dragons were actually physical beings, but we as humans were also vibrating at a higher frequency. So we were able to physically work with these dragon beings. And then I saw how eventually there did come a fall, and it was basically the Atlantean fall where the frequency level dropped tremendously on planet Earth. And then these dragons started kind of becoming scattered all over the Earth. And that's why you see that there's a lot of dragon energy still in China, in Japan with Mount Fuji being, that's what I was shown, a big dragon energy hub. And then like places like Wales, Scotland, England, having a lot of dragon energy, because that's where another big dragon tribe was located. in general, big mountain ranges, higher locations on planet Earth, they're still going to have a lot of dragon energy, because once upon a time, dragons physically did exist there in these locations. And so what I've seen in my Akashic records was that I worked with them physically. They were physically here, but that we would have this complete telepathic connection with the dragon. And you did need to be of a certain level of training. Like basically these were some kind of dragon mystery schools, you could call them. Some kind of dragon mystery school, where you would learn how to telepathically connect with the dragon, because of course this is a very big energy, but in essence it's a very heart-based energy. And what is the dragon now? The way that I see it is, this is an opportunity for us to fully connect in with our biggest fears and see that they can be our biggest strength. And if we have the dragon as an ally, then we have overcome the biggest fear. Because imagine if that is, once upon a time, this was a physical being that you would have to face. You would have to overcome the fear, have a telepathic complete connection of trust and surrender. And then you would be able to work together. If you could do that now with this energetic dragon spirit guide, then you can face whatever you have to face in life. But back to your question. So yeah, they definitely were real, because I was shown in several people's records that they were with the dragons. They had worked with the dragons. And yeah, so I started making this book based on these different people's Akashic Records readings. I did hypnosis sessions with clients where they went into their own memories with the dragons. So that is all, I put that all together in a story.
Yeah, because it is quite fascinating. Like if you look at the Chinese astrology, every other animal still exists except the dragon. Like the dragon is the only out of place being in the whole Chinese astrology. So I've also always believed that probably it existed at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And also a fun fact, the word dinosaur was not invented until the 1800s somewhere. Before that, they would refer to fossils and bones being found from the dinosaurs to dragons. Mm-hmm. So it was only when science started picking up and archaeology and their vocabulary expanded that they started referring to these things that they were finding as dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. And before that, they were known as dragons.
And we just did a live stream event called the Dragon Codex. Okay. The replay is available on our website, but we go into some of these details, and specifically the dinosaurs. It's like those are all beings that were created from original dragon DNA, and so the dinosaurs are presented as these kind of like naturally occurring beings that like came upon this earth. But what was happening was there were negative service to self beings that had taken genetics from these positive dragons and these positive dragon families, and they were inverting them and doing experiments, doing like genetic mutation and genetic modification. And so when we think of dinosaur, it is essentially the lowered, kind of dumbed down version of what the dragon actually represents. And like we look at the T-Rex, and like we look at an image of a T-Rex and like the little arms, and we're like, there's no way that was intended to be created like that by our source creator. That's fucking that's crazy.
It is a little bit weird, because it's like a chicken. When you see a chicken, like imagine if you would have the carcass of a chicken. You would see real arms, but it has wings. So if you look at a T-Rex and look at its skeleton, that would not make sense that this being is so big and then it has these tiny arms. There's a good chance that they actually had wings, and maybe they were dragons, or they were some type of a dragon being, positive, negative, both of them. But a lot of these bones that are dinosaur bones, I think, are just dragons.
Mm-hmm. And so now this is coming to the surface a lot right now for all of us to get back in touch with the dragon relationship, because we're also very conditioned around the concept of reptilian and draconian and kind of, you know, any of these negative or evil extraterrestrial beings that we're told are doing things to humanity. And these associations with those types of species and those types of races, it's caused us to kind of push our connection with dragons a little bit away, because we've been programmed with this fear around what a reptile is and what a reptile would do. And so that's where we have these kind of like imposter dragons. And we aren't even really liking calling them dragons anymore. This is where they turn into reptilians. So they're just imposter reptilians that kind of pose sometimes as like an etheric dragon, like a dragon spirit, and they will be negative. And so they will kind of try to manipulate people's thoughts and their experience in a negative way while they're posing as this kind of dragon form or this dragon presentation. So it's really important for us to have this discernment so that we can recognize, like you're saying, how to know when there is someone coming with authentic energy or not authentic energy, or if they're healed or if they're not healed. That's the same way as identifying these different energies that will come to us in these spirit realms, is really holding our discernment around questioning if this is a negative or a positive energy that we're receiving, and being able to then make our choice to hold our boundary. Because like Deborah says, none of these positive beings are going to push us. They're not going to scare us. They're not going to overload us if we are feeling too uncomfortable in the situation. And we might end up having fear triggered because of our trauma, because of our past experiences. So we need to notice if that's being triggered on our own or not. But these positive beings are always going to back up if we want them to. And so if we are feeling uncomfortable in this space of connecting with dragons, know that you hold that permission and you hold that sacred boundary, and that all of the positive beings will always listen to you when you are asking them to give you some space.
And can I ask you that, just by seeing me right now, can you do a reading quickly to just give an idea to people of what kind of reading happens?
Yeah,
I have a good idea. That's tune into the galactic stuff, and I'm getting Atlantean and Lemurian stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So this came up for Benoit as well, but Sirius, the Sirius star system, Sirius B, which is the Sirius B star, and it's specifically with the Blue Ray souls, which are the Maharaji Grail lines. So these are essentially royal Vedic families, which are royal Lemurian families. And so that's the first place that I receive, is very, very connected to Sirius and connected to the Vedas and the holding of the wisdom keeping of what the Vedas actually is.
Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing, when he was talking, I started getting images of you in this Lemurian family setting with the family that you have now, with Benoit and your children, and you are together, and I'm seeing you on a beach, and you're by the water, and you are looking humanoid, but your skin is kind of like you can go in the water and out of the water, and you have gills. You have gills here, so you can breathe underwater. It's almost like you can exist on land and in the water. And I'm seeing you swimming, all of you, together, like with a bunch of very big turtles and seahorses and all these exotic fishes and stuff. And I'm seeing you chanting together. So you and the children and Benoit, in this lifetime, you're sitting on this beach and you're doing some frequency stuff. You're like chanting, and it's creating this ripple of vibration, and it's like charging up the land. You're charging up the land around you, this community. And that's why I'm seeing this plant next to you. Like I'm feeling you have this connection, you now in the lifetime that you are together, your family, you're doing this work with all the plants in the house and like plants around you. So that's what you're doing.
That's so funny. That came up when I did the reading with Ben
Watson.
That was the plants.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Also seeing this connect into Lyra, into the star of Vega in Lyra, which is really where the source of the Vedas came from. That's going to connect into your left ear, where Lyra is, and then Sirius is going to be underneath your right armpit here on your body. So you have this kind of energy, like it's like this golden strap that comes down over your higher heart from your left ear down underneath your armpit. It's like this kind of like belt of energy that's like opening up right there.
And what does that mean, though?
We have the structure of our body is we have the Stargate system around our body. So it's the zodiac suns. So each zodiac house has a specific location around our body.
Okay.
And so that then corresponds to a specific place in the galaxy. And so the Sirius place is under the right armpit. Yeah, uh-huh. And under the right armpit and up to the left ear. So the left ear is where Lyra is going to be. And so from the left ear, then to your higher heart, down to that Sirius place, you're going to have this whole kind of channeling, like belt turning on. It's like this radiating golden belt is what is coming up.
So does this give me an idea of my life's purpose, what you just said?
Yeah, I would say so, because we always want to start at these basics, even though they're not really basics, but it's like we think of life purpose and we go into the details of the future and all of these creations and what we're here to do and how we're here to be of service. But your presence is of service. Your vibration is your service. And so your connection with yourself and your connection with your family and connection with the planet is literally your purpose. And so that will then show up in the chanting, and how the chanting and the mantras is very specific to the Vedas, and it's very specific to these Lemurian royal families. And so that, just by starting to do chanting with knowing this information, you're then going to open up these frequencies in your blueprint that are going to show you this ease of simplicity of that is your purpose, waking up day to day, chanting, doing these very grounded things. That is the basis of why you're here. And then anything else from there is just going to open up from that expression that you already have.
Ryan, Deborah, thank you both for being here and for sharing your story. It's been so inspiring to hear how you are weaving creativity, nature, and soul into everything you do. And thank you, all of you listening in today. Thanks for tuning in. We hope this conversation sparked something in you, whether it's the urge to create, to slow down, or just to live a little more from the heart. Until next time, take good care and stay connected to what lights you up.